libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues? Do you get ticked off with ongoing colonization? Do you have something to say? Or do you want to learn more? We have just the thing. Join UBC's first ever Indigenous radio collective at CITR Radio, Unceded Musqueam Territories. Our show, Unceded Airwaves, airs every Monday from 11 to 12, and we meet from 12 to 1 to plan our upcoming shows. We're interested in content covering various things from film to literature, current day politics, history, whatever you want to talk about, we're into it. Everyone welcome, Indigenous and non-Indigenous.
Good morning, or Wana Sky. You are listening to the Indigenous Collective, a.k.a. Unceded Airwaves, here at CITR 101.9. My name is Willow Thixon, and I will be your host today. I am Anishinaabe, Cree, Métis. I come from the prairies, but I have been here. I'm kind of an import. I've been here for like 10 years. This week, we have a little bit of a different topic. I have been talking about sightsee, powwows, culture, a little bit of music. I've had various types of discussions. And this week, I really want to talk about resurgence as we head into the summer months. So in light of resurgence, I'm going to play you one of my favorite songs. It's a Cree sunrise song. So it was typically a song that was played, say you were in camp and there were a bunch of teepees around. There would be a singer that would come and wake you up and they would sing this song. So if you're just waking up, Wanaska, good morning, get up, it's up and early, 11 o'clock. If you're not already up, then just take this moment and really enjoy this song. It's one of my favorites, and it's a great way to start the day. This is the Cree Sunrise Song, otherwise known as a Wanaska.
Wanaska! Ah!
Good morning. You were just listening to the Cree Sunrise song, Wanna Ska. And you are listening to Unceded Airwaves here on CITR 101.9. At the very beginning of my show, I did not raise my hands in thanks to the Musqueam people for hosting us on their beautiful unceded territories. And my apologies for that. I love starting the show with gratitude for being hosted here. So I would like to thank the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations for hosting us on their beautiful unceded territories. That was the Cree Sunrise song, and I'm about to talk a little bit about resurgence and as it's happening both at the kind of community level and at the national level and potentially the international level. Well, not potentially, it's actually happening at the international level. But when we talk about resurgence within Indigenous communities and Indigenous culture, I feel like after the whole residential school, I'm going to say attempt of genocide, we had a little bit of lull in culture because people were literally, like, the Indian was beaten out of the child. People were no longer speaking their language. People were no longer practicing their culture, their community, their songs, their dances, their, you know, their traditional practices on the land. So there was a kind of a lull that happened with the practices because there was a whole generation of Indigenous people that didn't really want to be Indian or Native or Aboriginal or whatever politically correct term you didn't want to be. They didn't want to be Cree. They didn't want to be Anishinaabe because it was seen as a shame or a stain on who they were and their family. And what happened out east is a lot of families ended up hiding the fact that they might be part Native or they were Native or they were trying to say other things. I heard stories of people saying that they were Black Irish or some other, you know, type of darker identity around the world just to get away from it. So recently, well, not recently, but like I think within the past 20, 30 years, there's actually been this huge resurgence and people are taking back the culture, the language, and both revitalizing it and practicing it more. So the people that were knowledge holders are now passing on the knowledge through generations. So part of me playing the Cree Sunrise song and the Wanna Ska song is, for me, it was one of the very first songs I learned in my own language. So I would wake up and every morning I would try and start and learn to practice and learn to sing that song before I accidentally warped my drumming in the rain. So I used to wake up and try and sing that song because I don't know my native language. I grew up around Cree speakers, not around Anishinaabe or Ojibwe speaking people. And so for me, even though my mom is Anishinaabe and my father's Cree, I didn't grow up speaking either language. My mom went to, you know, was taken away, 60 scoop, residential school, you know, foster homes, that kind of ordeal where she didn't really, she knew and tried to bring me to powwows and tried to teach me a lot of things, but it wasn't there. So this was part of my resurgence. There's a lot of people right now, even in Vancouver and all over Canada and Turtle Island and the world, that are reclaiming their Indigenous language. And they say that our teachings that were given and passed down through the seven generations, or passed down part of our seven generations, is our language. So the teaching is not whole unless it's taught in your language. And in order to know that, you have to know your language because there's subtleties within every individual Indigenous language that can't be translated properly or adequately into English. So what's happening is there's people like Kel Salem. Big props to you, Kel Salem, if you're listening out there. If you're not, still big props to you for starting the Squamish Language House in North Van and then subsequently the Squamish Language Program and at SFU that's starting, I think it's in August or it's September. They just did their final, I think they sent out their acceptance packages, but it's a huge thing for youth to try and rebuild and reclaim their language, start speaking to each other in their language, because there's some communities that have maybe one, two fluent language speakers left, and that's not a lot. That means those languages are dying all up the coast and all across Turtle Island. Gratefully, Cree people, there's such a huge majority of us that it's actually the number one spoken Indigenous language even here in Vancouver, which is kind of mind-blowing when you think about it, because we're on Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh territory, and Cree people are from the prairies. And, you know, there's like kind of an overlap near Kamloops where the Cree people came in. But the fact that it's the most widely spoken language here says something. Like, there's not a loss of Cree language. So in terms of revitalization and resurgence, what I really would like to see is more young people. There was a young boy you could see on YouTube that was really, he won all these awards because he lived with his grandma. And he just spoke Cree everywhere he went. He spoke Cree and he was like eight. And he's fluent. which is amazing. And here on the coast, we have a huge language revitalization program, which is happening. But what we need to see is resurgence. Where is that language being spoken? Is it just going to be in these universities where people are trying to relearn it? Or is it going to be everywhere? So there's a couple of people that I think are doing a really good job of this in terms of trying to blend it and really recognizing where it belongs. And one of these people, his name is Casp. He's from the Okanagan. You may have seen him. I think he was here doing a couple shows last year or the year before at that, I'm trying to remember the theater name, down on Commercial. And he was absolutely phenomenal. And he posted a little bit about it, how he was really trying to regain his culture through song and through reclamation, trying to get his daughter to powwow dances and things like that. So he had this song that he compiled with Winston Watuni, and it's called Cree Hop. He said it was all in Cree, and he was super excited to be posting this and having this out there to have a whole song in Cree, which I think is a beautiful, beautiful act of resurgence, and I would love to see this everywhere. I would love to see our people being proud to speak their language and then being acknowledged for seeing our language in books, in music, and in movies. I know down in Diné territory, they have literally like dubbed movies in Navajo or in Diné or the language down there, which I think is super cool that you can watch like Star Wars. Navajo version, which isn't actually the Navajo version, like fighting for fry bread or green chilies or something, but it is like Navajo dubbed over the Star Wars so that you can watch it in that language, which is really, really an amazing thing to see and an absolutely incredible way to recreate this resurgence of the language in young people. So this is Cree Hop by Casp featuring Winston Watuni. Take a listen.
I feel the latent effects of assimilation in a city native, raised by bright light skyscrapers, born with dim prospects, little peace in living as a child, hot-headed by the fact I wasn't wild like they called my ancestors. Imagine what it'd be to live nomadic off the land and free. Instead, I was full of heat like a furnace, cause I wasn't furnished with the language and traditional ways of my peeps. Yeah, I used to feel like I wasn't truly indigenous. Now I say me witch, get your money due for showing me my true roots. Definitely native, take responsibility for being educated. My people and customs originating from early phases of history. Yes, deeper than fried bread and contest powwows. Tears shed in the sweat, large prayers go out to all those I've wronged and who have wronged me. Gotta treat them like family. Get your money, dude. We do cowboy shin. Jimushka with Zion. Me Dutch, but me, it is Zion. Me Shishanams, I get you white. When Gnu Shishanam, isn't that with Shanam? Me Wang, Jinugam of Yan. Need me show me, we do cowboy shin. I'm Jit, I budget too young. Anishinabe is your twine. When me Jit big, it came to my KI. Anishinabe, been my dizzy win. Becoming aware of a heartbeat's fragility. So I pray for my creator's will and humility. It seems my prayer's weak, I can't speak, not a linguist. Does he hear my English when I vent? I fear the answer to the question. This is symbolic of anguish I feel regarding language and the obligation of revitalizing something sacred. Failure to carry through is disgracing a nation. My first tongue's in need of a facelift, but deciphering conjugations like trying to find my way through a maze in the matrix. Complex, hard to start without an end, aside from being fluent. I gotta push the limit if I'm gonna keep pursuing, so I use it in a way that relates to my life and vocab. Bring some entertainment to it, spit it on a track, and I take it out the class. Can't let what I lack become a self-defeating habit that'll make me wanna quit. Get your money, dude, we do cowboy shin. Jimushka with Zion, me Dutch, but me, it is Zion. Me Shishanams, I get you white. When Gnu Shishanam, isn't that with Shanam? Me Wang, Jinugam of Yan. Need me show me, we do cowboy shin. I'm Jit, I budget too young. Anishinabe is your twine. When me Jit big, it came to my KI. Anishinabe been my dizzy win. It's far-fetched, but grandfather, please help me learn it. Help me assist in keeping it from burning. Don't let me quit and flee from working for a worthy purpose. Enlighten me and help me comprehend effects of my service. I need a spark in my desire from something high. Pride and negative reminders killing my stride. Sometimes I'm the type that likes getting results overnight, without sweating or stressing overnight. So I pray, Creator, give me strength, then I can move on. Creator, show us love so we can spread around. Communicate with us from above. Hear me now, my prayers in a song, I speak them out loud. Grandfather, help us to revitalize the language and race, so we walk the red road that you paved. Communicate with us from above. Hear me now, my prayers in a song, I speak them out loud. Get your money, dude, we do cowboy shin. Jimushka with Zion, me Dutch, but me, it is Zion. Me Shishanams, I get you white. When Gnu Shishanam, isn't that with Shanam? Me Wang, Jinugam of Yan. Need me show me, we do cowboy shin. I'm Jit, I budget too young. Anishinabe is your twine. When me Jit big, it came to my KI. Anishinabe been my dizzy win. Creator, give me strength so I can move on. Creator, show us love so we can spread around. Communicate with us from above. Hear me now, my prayers in a song, I speak them out loud. Grandfather, help us to revitalize the language and way, so we walk the red road that you paved. Communicate with us from above. Hear me now, hear me now.
Welcome back to Unceded Airwaves, the Indigenous Collective here at CITR 101.9. I would like to raise my hands in thanks to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations for hosting us on their beautiful unceded territories. You were just listening to Tall Paul, Prayers in a Song. It is one of my favorites. I'm kind of biased between those two songs because one is in Cree and one is in Ojibwe, and as I introduced myself at the beginning of the show, I am both of those things. But Tall Paul is a Ojibwe Anishinaabe man from Leech Lake. He is, well, if you don't know where that is, that's in Minnesota. So Ojibwe or Anishinaabe people are both in Canada and in the United States. There are five nations, but He did that song to rap about his struggle learning his Indigenous language and connecting to his Native identity. And to me, that is one of the ultimate acts of resurgence. One of the things that I did to connect to my Indigenous language and to my culture, and I talked about this before, how I wasn't raised in that way, is I named my dog in Cree and then tried to train her in Cree. And she was getting actually really good at understanding Cree. So she was fully trained in Cree. And the problem for me at that point was, I was like, yes, learning my language. Yes, resurgence. Yes, I'm doing this. And like, now I can pass it on and I can teach my little cousins Cree and I can, you know, start to learn conversations because at least I know the general commands. But then my friend came to try and walk my dog, and all of a sudden she's like, how come your dog never sits for me? Or how come your dog never comes for me? And so I had to train my dog again in English. So now my dog is doing better than I am, and she is bilingual. But that's a whole other topic. Another thing that is happening right now with resurgence is young people all over are starting to want to learn their Indigenous language. They're getting back out onto their land. They're starting to revitalize practices that were at risk of dying. So we're not holding on to strings anymore. We're actually, there's enough people practicing them that they have started to take on a new, they've started to become modern. And so we're not just trying to really grasp onto those strings of our culture and be like, this is the only shred we have left. Now, because resurgence has been happening for a while, things are starting to pick up. We're starting to evolve, like any culture. All cultures evolve. And I had talked previously in my powwow episodes about how powwow has evolved, how powwow is not gender binary, how males dance as females, and it started as a switch dance, which started as a joke, which is kind of weird that it started kind of as a joke, but then there has been place for two-spirit and, you know, all the gender fluidity type discussions within the powwow. Not the discussion, but there were men dancing as women. There were women dancing as men. There were women, that's what started female dancing, was women were like, no, I'm going to dance with these guys too. These guys are going to come back and they're going to do a fancy dance. And then women started dancing too. So it has taken this evolution because as natural progressions with all culture, it's happening. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the North now. So getting a little bit away from my own personal like Cree Ojibwe language thing, there is a group of women up north in the Yukon that just hosted their very first own women's hand game tournament. So if you don't know a lot about hand games, I'm going to explain to you the rules. It's pretty straightforward. We call it stick games on the prairies, and it's a really fun game. It's actually gambling. So we've been gambling since time immemorial. It's in our blood. But it's a game where you literally have a token in one hand. Could be a rock, could be a shiny thing, whatever your token is. And then you put your hands either behind your back or under a jacket. And there's another team on opposite to you. Or say we'll play one-on-one. We'll theoretically play one-on-one on air. So I have a token in one of my hands. The premise of the game is you have to guess which hand it is in. Really straightforward. But I'm under my jacket mixing it up in the hand. And so if I cross my arms in front of me, you have to guess right or left. And my right is now my left, etc. And it's a really, really fun game if you get good at it. I got very confused quite a few times because there's a legitimate dance that goes along with it. And you're on your knees and these hand games get really, really exciting. And there's drummers right behind you. And so it gets really exciting. But traditionally up north, it has been all men. It's a men's game only, or was an only men's game. So what's been happening is like all these young people are wanting to play these tournaments that go on. You create a team of like 4 to 6 people and you go up and you pay $600 to $800 to get in. But sometimes the like jackpot to win is like you get 10 grand or something like that if the team wins. And really it's just like a big gambling tournament, but it's a cultural gambling tournament where there's Dene hand drums. And so there was a group of women that was like, you know what? It's 2016. Women are going to play now, which I think is absolutely beautiful and absolutely amazing that this is happening. This is part of the evolution. This is part of the resurgence, because resurgence can't just be holding on and grasping to those cultural tiny strings and being like, this is all we have left. We must preserve it. I think for me, resurgence is also evolution. Resurgence is that evolution of culture, because how are we supposed to grow as a culture, if all we're doing is holding back? Our people since time immemorial, have been also growing and also evolving. We never were stagnant. So I'm going to play you a little bit of a Hand Games song. It's not really a song. It's more of a YouTube clip that plays to you the kind of music that's behind the Dene Hand Games. So now you can imagine these women that haven't been really allowed to play in the North for centuries, and now they started their own Dene all women's hand game tournament. They were making drums. Another member of Rematriate, I'm also a member of Rematriate, Claire Anderson was in it, Angela Code, former UBC student, and they were making drums and hosted this all women's hand game tournament, which you can check out the article on CBC. They have one you can put in, hand games tournament. And I'm just going to play you like just a little clip from the internet of what the drumming sounds like, because it doesn't sound like any of the drumming that I've ever played here on the show before. This is the Dene Hand Games style drumming. It's just a little minute clip just so you can get the feel. So imagine bouncing and hiding and sneaking and like crossing your arms and like little hand gesture dancing. And this is Resurgence.
It's time to get outside and play with your friends. Take a copy of Discorder magazine with you. I'm out to lunch. In the May issue, we talked to MOSFET, Cornshed, Horsepower, So Loki, and Glad Rags. We also feature Hits and Misses Record Shop, and Brenda Gurnow writes an article exploring the shortfalls of Vancouver nightlife. With album reviews of Coben, Ace Martins, and Operators, and live show reviews of Young Lean and Courtney Barnett, you won't want to miss this one. Pick up a copy at your favorite local record store, cafe, or retailer, or visit discorder.ca for more content.
Oh, man.
What?
Welcome back to Unceded Airwaves, the Indigenous Collective here at UBC CITR 101.9. You were just listening to a little clip of a Dene Hand Games song, which is just like some casual drumming in the background. But if you imagine that drumming like essentially being right behind your ears and you're betting and you're gambling, it makes it a little bit intense. I'm really proud of the women that hosted the all-women's first all-women hand games tournament. So it was. I think that is an area of resurgence where we are now taking threads of our culture and evolving them. I think one of those things that's happening is we're really also starting to recognize our youth. Some of our youth out there are doing incredible things. They're standing up for themselves. They're learning their culture. They're learning their songs at such a rapid pace that the people, I feel like sometimes I'm in the middle generation. Like I'm in a generation between, you know, the loss of our culture and our language and then this huge resurgence of our youth that are like, oh, I've been speaking my own language since I was, you know, that was my first language. When I was out in Montreal, I was doing some work with McGill at the First People's House they host a sports camp called the Eagle Spirit High Performance Youth Camp. I was out there and I was working with these Mohawk kids and they were like, oh yeah, Mohawk was my first language. I was like, what? Like, I'm starting to practice it, but there they have Mohawk immersion and they learn Mohawk and they learn English and they learn French. So they're trilingual by the time they graduate high school. And I'm like, my mind was blown. So some of these kids out there, not only are they just learning their language and their songs and their dances and their culture, they're going a step beyond. They're using their own Indigenous identity and rights and trying to make a stand, trying to take a stand for something. And I think all that is a different kind of resurgence. That is such a powerful level of understanding of your own personal power and personal power to change things and personal power to execute your life in a way that will better the people following you, following the seven generations teaching. If you don't know what that is, that's so that everything that you do in your life, you think about seven generations ahead of you. There's alterations in this teaching. Some people say that teaching is actually, you know, you get your teachings this generation from two teachings, two generations back. So that's three. And then think about four generations forward. But, you know, that what however you think, however you want to catalog those seven generations, I was told from your life, you must think about seven generations previous, like in the future. So my great, 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 great grandchildren. And like, what am I leaving for them? So some of these youth are starting that and really embodying that and standing up for so many beautiful, beautiful things. One of our Vancouver favorites, Takaya Blaney, I'm going to give you a big hi-hi and a big miigwech because you have been doing amazing things. You can watch her on TEDx. She has her own TEDx. She's been at pretty much every rally, standing up for so many things. She is being to the United Nations and she's constantly trying to battle climate justice. And if you've listened to me before, you will know that I have been talking about Tsitsi. I talk about resurgence. I talk about the constant battle for our land and our water because it's critical for us at this time, as you can tell by all of the fires. And I saw a thing that was like potentially funnel clouds are going to be happening in Alberta. Like, I don't know if serendipitous is not the word because that's a happy word, but fires and funnel clouds in Alberta. Meanwhile, in BC, we're pretty relaxed, and Alberta's where all the oil is. But what does that mean for Northeast BC, where all the fracking is? I don't know. It's speculation at this point. Back to it. Resurgence. So I was talking about Takaya Blaney and resurgence, where she is a youth standing up for what she believes in. And she's been doing this since I think she was like 8 years old, was like, I'm going to take a stand and I'm going to make a song. And she made this song called Shallow Waters. And I think the story goes that she made this song and sent it to Greenpeace. Greenpeace sent it to like everybody. And then they sent it to Enbridge. And so Takaya has been at the forefront of a lot of this climate justice action and oil and saving her waters. And she is slamming, I believe. And if you don't know where that is, that's up by Prince Rupert. And she does a beautiful, beautiful job of articulating that generational resurgence where she speaks her language. She will introduce herself in her language. And then she always is very articulate about her connection through her teachings to water, her connection through her teachings to land. And seeing such a young person be that connected to their own culture is the ultimate act of resurgence, I think. So I'm going to play you a little Takaya. She's also a singer. This song is called Shallow Waters, and a big hi-hi for Takaya for doing all of the hard work you do in reclaiming our land and fighting for climate justice. Here's Takaya.
Shallow waters, I can't see your clear waves lapping at my feet. The lifeless ocean, black, not blue. I didn't help but deep down I knew. In shallow waters, I used to see dolphins playing in front of me. The seaweed sway. Tears fall from me.
Oh, man.
What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo, man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow,
that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. Okay, dude. We get it.
Dude!
Only on CITR.
Welcome back to Unceded Airwaves, the Indigenous Collective, here on CITR 101.9. You were just listening to Takiya Blaney, Shallow Waters. I was talking about resurgence and youth standing up for what they believe in as an act of resurgence and really understanding their personal power, feeling empowered. I want to talk a little bit now from youth. We talked about youth. We talked about the North and the hand games and the women branching out and the evolution. We talked a little bit about language and language revitalization, a little hi-hi again to Kill Salem and a little hi-hi to the women in the North. Hi-hi to Takiya for doing all that she does. And now I'm going to talk a little bit about something that I really admire. I really admire Inuit tattoos and Maori tattoos, to be honest, Indigenous tattooing. I don't come from a people really where we tattoo a lot. So when I see these beautiful tattoos on women, and in particular facial tattoos, I'm in awe and I love, love, love their tattoos. I'm not about to go and get any of their tattoos because I believe that's one of the things that has happened throughout the years of appropriation. People are like, oh, well, I know it's taken you 100 years to regain and resurge that practice within your culture, and now I'm just going to own it. And I think that is, you know, wrong on so many levels. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about the many ways that resurgence is happening within our communities throughout various places in Turtle Island. And I was going to talk about it's a controversial history, and right now it's a current revival of Inuit facial tattoos in women. And I don't know if you've seen them, they're absolutely stunning. They're lines on the face, lines down the chin, kind of like a V in the forehead, there's dots on the cheek. It's absolutely phenomenal and stunning. And there's been a group, I think like 4 or 5 women right now up in the north that are doing traditional Inuit tattooing, like stick and poke tattooing. And so traditionally, like, girls would get tattooed, and I think their facial tattoos were the first ones. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that they are the first ones were done on the face and on the forehead, cheeks, and chin. And they were really, really painful. But at the same time, it was one of the elders said it would be impossible to keep your toes from wiggling, and that because it would be so painful. And so the artist would run her needle and thread through the oil lamps of the Inuit to heat it up and then stitch into the young girl's face. And to me, that sounds excruciatingly painful, but also beautiful. So apparently said that it felt like your face was on fire. And this practice of Inuit tattooing, and especially facial tattoos, has stopped. So the controversial history with Inuit facial tattooing is hard because, number one, I'm not Inuit. I'm Korean Anishinaabe, so it's easy for me to talk about those. And number two, I think that there was the same thing that happened in the South that there was in the North with residential school, but a farther away. So you get taken. And so here we had residential schools within Vancouver. We had residential schools close enough to home that you could go home. But I know in a lot of places in the North, they would just keep you there because it was harder. So if you don't know a lot about residential school, you were taken, sent to school from September, and then sent home for the summer. Not everybody was sent home and not everybody made it. But I believe in the North, from what I've heard, is that in the North, people were taken to residential school and frequently just not sent home because it was so far. So within this that same thing that I was talking about, the shame and the, you know, killing the Indian and the child and the not practicing your language, not practicing your culture, and the shame of tattooing, it was removed. Like, the women were no longer practicing. There was nobody really tattooing. There was nobody actually like resurging this practice. So there is a movie out, if you wanted to watch it, that is called Tanit, which is otherwise known as Retracing the Lines of Inuit Tattoos. And it is this woman, I'm going to attempt at saying her name. Her name is Alethea Arnaknak Baril, and she does a retracing of kind of the revival of the Inuit tradition of facial tattooings. And it was forbidden, like legitimately forbidden for a century. And so I heard stories, to kind of digress to a Northwestern context, I heard stories that this also happened in Haida tattooing. So in Haida Gwaii, tattooing was huge. So they would tattoo essentially their crests and lineages all over their body, and women would have tattoos like essentially up to their necks. Their whole bodies would be tattoos. And in residential school and before, they were banned from the tattoo, much like the potlatch was banned. And that's when jewelry carving became a more common thing, because people are like, well, I can't tattoo. I'm going to carve these, you know, crests that I have onto this jewelry. And I'm going to wear it. And I'm going to wear all of it, because before we used to have tattoos. And some places they're actually revitalizing and resurging the indigenous tattooing. There's a gentleman named Nahan, and he is Tlingit, and he is doing the same thing in Tlingit culture, because they are also tattooed people. So Haida people, Tlingit people, and then this Inuit resurgence. The reason why I think the Inuit resurgence is powerful to me because it is women, and it is powerful, powerful women regaining their culture through tattoo art and through tattoo cultural practice. I think that is next level resurgence. So if you've ever seen traditional Maori tattoos, which are not very common either, the indigenous people in Aotearoa, you have to roll that R, I'm not very good at it. Aotearoa, they have facial tattoos, and I don't understand the origin. I've never been told the stories, but the women have facial tattoos, and you can have your whole face tattooed, and you can have all sorts of facial tattoos. But a lot of people only wear paint now because you get discriminated on if you have facial tattoos, much like if you have facial tattoos here in Canada, people are going to be like, what? But there's something so elegant and beautiful about Inuit facial tattoos and Maori facial tattoos that to me, this is a beautiful act of resurgence. And I don't know what, you know, the social implications are post facial tattooings, but they're beautiful. And I think they're an act of resurgence. And I think much like there should be no discrimination for other cultural practices, there should be no discrimination for facial tattoos. My personal opinion. I'm going to play some Tanya Tagaq because she has done, she is Inuit, to follow in this Inuit resurgence thing. And she sings in traditional throat singing as well as in English. And she does both, or I think it's mostly throat singing, to be honest. And she won the Polaris Prize. So there's a resurgence of our culture in a very well recognized sphere. So if you haven't heard Tanya Tagaq, I've played her before on our show. I'm going to play a really, I'm going to play something off of the Animism album because that is her, that's the one that won her the Polaris Prize, which is a very well-known musical prize here in Canada. So I'm going to play you a little Ok Blood. Check this out. welcome back to Unceded Airwaves. Whew, the Indigenous Collective. That was Tanya Tagak. And that was Uja. I know I said I was going to play a different song, but this is my favorite song off Animism, so I played that instead. I'm sorry if I let you down. My apologies to all of my listeners and podcast listeners. Tanya Tagak, to me, after winning the Polaris Music Prize, I thought her music was stunning before that, but since then she has been featured on Vikings, and I don't know if you've watched the show Vikings, but she's on Vikings. Her music is on Vikings and all over in a lot of beautiful scenes, and it's really taken throat singing to the next level. I saw some young throat singers doing a bunch of stuff at Parliament Hill. So it's getting all over. So with the recognition of our arts and resurgence of our arts, I think people should have a better understanding and recognition of the resurgence of facial tattoos. I'm pro-facial tattoos, like I was saying. So I'm going to play a last song, which is a little bit intense, but it's going to premise to my next episode. And if you haven't been listening, I have been on air every 2 weeks over the summer. So every second week you can check an episode by Willow, part of the Indigenous Collective. If you want to get involved with the Indigenous Collective, please email the station, CITR, any of us, programming@CITR.ca. You could email me, willow.thixon@gmail.com. You could tell everybody that you know, Indigenous or non-Indigenous, and you want to come and hang out and be on the radio and learn some new skills, come and join us. We like everybody, and I'm super friendly. But I'm going to play a last track as I head out for the day. That is, it's a spoken word piece by a person I have met who is absolutely lovely, named Whisper. This is her TEDx, so it's 6 minutes long, and I'm sorry, and it's a little bit intense, but I'm going to do an episode in a couple weeks, where I talk about female resurgence and rematriate and rematriation and women sticking up for women and a little bit of MMIW, although I don't like to talk about that because I'm a super positive person. And MMIW is a little bit dark and a little bit deep for me. Hits a little bit close to home in a lot of regards. But I think that the most beautiful place of resurgence that I have seen happening right now is self-love. Self-love as an Indigenous person and understanding your own path and understanding where you've come from and understanding that you can not feel ashamed that you don't know your culture, not feel ashamed that you don't know your language, and really accept yourself and your own journey and then start from there. Because resurgence and self-love, the way that the attempted genocide happened in the past, was to attempt for us to hate ourselves. So it's become an internal struggle. And now resurgence of self-love, being self-aware and really accepting your own space and journey is the ultimate resurgence to me. Well, this is me signing off. I'd like to raise my hands and thanks again to the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh people for hosting us on their beautiful unceded territories. And this is a hi hi and a Timagwich for listening. Check me out every 2 weeks here on CITR 101.9.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
This is a call to action to all women and mankind to not only acknowledge that rape of Native women is epidemic nationwide, but begin exploring the larger, harder questions of but how and why Claim your part in this story, for every coin carries two sides. Where you can start is with our mistold history and American beliefs that over the centuries have normalized this violence Native women contend with when our fathers and sons choose them to sexually terrorize. We can no longer remain bystanders while the self-determination of Native women continues to be undermined. For the denial of their humanity measures the limitation of both yours and mine. You see, when Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492, he stepped foot upon indigenous land and declared, "You are Indians now, and in the spirit of me discovering you, we will commemorate the inception of this colonialism by allowing my syphilis-infected crew to rape you and you and you and you. But don't fret, I do assure my God does approve. For in order to divinely found this nation's justifiably appropriated, shiny and new, you, indigenous women, are hereafter deemed enemy, antithetical to Western patriarchy, and therefore must endure, being targeted by sexual terrorism that upon generations of your granddaughters hereafter will ensue." With him, Columbus brought what his culture and religion knew, that is the subjugation of women's self-determination to ensure a place at the table for men to do whatever necessary to guarantee their hierarchical power and piece of the pie, carved out by Europeans who, having no idea this continent even existed, accidentally did arrive, and who, hereafter, were aghast to find the embodiment of very different principles, epistemologies, and frames of mind, traditional systems of accountability that ensured rape did not have a presence in Native women's lives. For indigenous peoples observe the sacredness of women because we give life. Yet it is these same values that Europeans identified as scandalous ideologies that must be put to trial and crucified. And so, upon indigenous women's bodies, this war against the people was assigned. For what better way to devastate a society than by cutting off their lifeline? This is a call to action to all women and mankind to not only acknowledge that rape of Native women is epidemic nationwide, but begin exploring the larger, harder questions about how and why. Claim your part in this story, for every coin carries two sides. Where you can start is with our mistold history and American beliefs that over the centuries have normalized this violence Native women contend with when our fathers and sons choose them to sexually terrorize. We can no longer remain bystanders while the self-determination of Native women continues to be undermined. For when defending their humanity, there exists hope for both yours and mine. So why, in an era of today's citizens demanding righteous things like equal rights or taking Wall Street upon themselves to occupy, we have sadly overlooked this lasting heritage of genocide, founded upon the backs of violenced indigenous women, a legacy that today remains both very much intact and alive. Imagine living in a world where it is not a matter of if your body will be violated, but when and how many times. For according to current statistics,